A dream's a dream. 412-499-5000. Jackie from Squirrel Hill. How you doing, Jackie? For those of you in Pittsburgh, let me know what's going on tonight. Chilling and sipping and winding down is also a plan, yeah? Keep it safe out there. Let me let this track go.
You'd better run and hide. More to the side. any harder. Me and the boys coming down with murder. And it's gotta be the way. Everybody wants to make a move, so just party. Or we can have a jam. So get your move on, I'ma take this groove and slam. Flip it how I want it, flip. From the back to the front when I drops me the manuscript. Cause I got the moves. And I'm always on the floor with the crazy, crazy grooves. Tell me, can it feel the math skills coming with the fever, fever, fever?
A group called Osibisa, Spirit of the Land.
So away in the spirit of our land, in the spirit of.
It up to some rumba. Shauri Yako. Super Mazembe is a group. In a Tembo Sounds party, we play different genres for you. A chance to introduce you to different palettes of music. We are your music ambassadors. GTO, good times only.
zambi kwa Mungu Baba, kama onipende weye, wende lote mama, kama onipende weye, wende lote mama.
We stepped out in the morning, rode the light beneath the waves, and fired off a warning, the delight was rearranged. Stick your head out, count on me when you're falling down, don't give up on what we got now. I hear you calling, falling down, and just stop giving what you can't give now. I hear you calling, and she said, hold my hand, nothing I will change, the mortal man, mortal man. My friend, nothing I will change, the mortal man, mortal. Stepped out in the morning, holding tight beneath the shade. We stuck our heads out and fired off a warning to fly out in the night. Keep your head out to the calling. If you make it with your hands, you will better understand. So keep your feet out.
It's a lovely song, Mortal Man.
And if we take a stand,
Mr. Jeremy Loops.
All our plans, she said, hold my hand. Nothing I will change, the mortal man. Mortal man. My
coming up next is Sauti Sol, Susanna.
Also let you know what's happening in the innovation world, because it's important to share this news.
She said, hold my hand, nothing I will change, the mortal man, mortal man.
We want you to keep up and sharpen up those skills.
Tempo
Sounds of Culture. If you're joining us for the first time, welcome. If you're a returning listener, thank you very much. We do this every Saturday night, 8 to 10 Eastern Standard Time. The show is recorded. We even have an end call that plays on Tuesday mornings. And if you totally want to catch the shows on demand, you can go to my website, temposounds.com. Salty Soul, Susanna.
Just joining us, this is Dr. Kenya Oscar Radoli on Tembo Sounds, the culture where rhythm meets reason and innovation meets the people. This week, we're diving into something groundbreaking, something that's quietly reshaping how we work, create, and even think about intelligence. It's called agentic AI. You already know generative AI, the ChatGPTs, the beatmakers, the content creators, but agentic AI, that's the next level. It's AI with initiative. Systems that don't just respond, they act. They observe a situation, plan their next move, and execute tasks like digital co-workers that can research, design, schedule, or manage workflows while you focus on the big picture. Imagine an AI that writes your strategy memo, sends the follow-up emails, and even tracks project progress, all while learning your style. That's agentic AI. Autonomous, adaptive, and goal-driven intelligence that's starting to power innovation labs, smart campuses, and creative studios around the world. But let's keep it real. With this kind of power comes responsibility. Who's accountable when an AI agent makes a bad decision? And how do we make sure these systems act in alignment with human values, our values? So here's what you can do to stay ahead in this fast-moving AI wave. Stay curious. Follow credible AI news sources, podcasts, and innovation briefings. Experiment. Try AI tools in your daily work or creative life. Don't just read about them, use them. Join conversations in your community, at work, or online forums where AI meets ethics, leadership, and creativity. And most importantly, keep asking, how can this technology make us more human, not less? Because the future isn't just about smarter machines, it's about wiser people guiding them. Stay tuned, stay curious, and keep your innovation radar on high. This is Tembo Sounds, the culture, bringing you the pulse of technology, rhythm, and transformation.
It's a blast from the past. Boogie Nights. The Heat Wave.
Bayé. Tongo etani na Kinshasa ege, la capitali ya mboka 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 ya Zaire. Tongo etani na Kinshasa ege, la capitali ya mboka 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 ya Zaire. Putue indi na Kinshasa ege, la capitali ya mboka 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 ya Zaire. Putue indi na Kinshasa ege, la capitali ya mboka 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 ya Zaire. Tongo to ya mbaka basango, utaka na ba region baninga. Yo yo, to ya mbisango ya region ya Kivu, balobie. Volcano ya Virunga enungani, balobie. Volcano ya Virunga etumboki. Namolelie. Nalinga Virunga o chéri, to linga Virunga o, nalingi Virunga.
Nakona virunga mwana ya mama
abra. Nalinga virunga virunga bana mboka wo. Nalinga virunga mwana ya mama abra.
Nalinga virunga sheri tolinga virunga
mwana mama.
Nakona virunga mwana ya mama abra.
Boko sana kadeo Kivu rejo ya Zaire. Zaire mboka 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 ya bakoko mama e.
Nalinga virunga sheri tolinga virunga. Na virunga mwana ya mama abra.
Na rejo ya Kivu oko mona parke virunga, oko mona volga virunga ekopela ngoyao.
Na linga virunga esherito linga virunga
baita.
Na virunga mwana ya mama abra.
Ya ya moloke ngai na linga kayeo. Na pona vie mazamba ndongi ya papa kama seke.
Na linga virunga esherito linga virunga. Na virunga mwana ya mama abra.
Mani mani jola witola na virunga yo. Wapi atei fataki na fili ango.
Na linga virunga esherito linga virunga. Na virunga mwana ya mama abra.
Na linga virunga esherito linga virunga. Na pona nanga virunga ya mama mama.
Na linga virunga esherito linga virunga. Na virunga mwana ya mama abra.
Temple Sounds of Culture. I'm your host, Dr. Kenya O.C. Redoli.
We don't have to worry about nothing. We got the fire and we burning one hell of a something. They're gonna see us from outer space, light it up. Like we're the stars of the human race, human race. When the light we
so they gon' put it out.
Commodores, everybody.
I may be just a foolish dreamer, but I don't care. I know my happiness is waiting out there somewhere. I'm searching for that silver lining.
I want to say thank you very much for those that caught the show live. Heading on to the next gig. Song is called Zoom. And if you miss any of the Tempo Sound shows, you can go to my website. I post the shows every week. Of course, we believe in on-demand listening. I've been your host, Dr. Kenya Oscar Ridoli. It's been my pleasure. It's been my honor. Until the next show, take it easy.
I'd like to know the taste of honey in my life, in my life. Well, I've shared so many pains, and I've played so many games. Oh, but everyone finds the right way somehow. Thank you.
this is God. Whenever I'm in Pittsburgh, which is always because I'm omnipresent, I listen to every radio station at the same time, including WRCT.
Forbes Avenue is a production of WRCT Pittsburgh. The opinions expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of WRCT, its members, or Carnegie Mellon University. Email questions or comments to pa@wrct.org.
Hi, you're listening to Forbes Avenue on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Today, we have a special episode with Professor David Shumway of the Literature Department at Carnegie Mellon University. He studies film. Thanks for coming on the show, Professor.
My pleasure.
Yeah, so you could tell us a little bit about yourself to get us started.
Well, I've been writing and studying about film since my days in graduate school at Indiana University in the 1970s. I've taught film at Carnegie Mellon since the mid-80s. I was involved in starting the film minor here and then in starting the film major. I've written about film in a number of different contexts, published in Cinema Journal. I have a book about the film director John Sayles. I have books about romance, where I write about romantic comedies and romance films like Casablanca and Gone with the Wind. So I have broad interest in cinema, especially American, but...
So what attracted you to studying cinema in the first place?
Well, when I was in high school, I was interested in the arts, especially in novels, which I regarded as a significant art form, but kind of realized at that point that it seemed as though the most interesting artists working at that moment were not novelists, but filmmakers. That was on the heels of the French New Wave and other important European directors who had really made a big splash here. And the beginning of the American auteur movement with people like Martin Scorsese and others making their first movies.
When would you say that change happened, when sort of the chief artists of a generation became the filmmakers?
Sometime in the 60s. I mean, there were great artists earlier, but they weren't generally recognized as such.
Mm-hmm. So I'll ask you a question you probably get a lot. What's your favorite movie to come out in 2024 so far?
Oh, in 2024?
Or any recent movie.
So what? Maybe my favorite movie in 2024 is Between the Temples, an independent film about a young cantor who is trying to figure out both his wife has recently died, so it's about his emotional difficulties, but also, of course, his relationship with the temple where he sings. It's the kind of movie that I like. It's small. It's about humans and their problems, and it's also funny. So, but you can tell that the title's a pun, Between the Temples being the brain, but also the place where he works.
Yeah, so I guess I'll put that on my Letterboxd watched list. Do you have a Letterboxd?
I don't.
Okay, you've heard of it, though?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So I recently got one, and that has become my sort of chief place to get movie recommendations. Where would you recommend regular people find good movies to watch, especially ones that might not be getting a lot of TV coverage on commercials, maybe smaller independent movies? Where do you find these?
Well, the New York Times reviews virtually every movie that gets a commercial release in the United States, so that's a good source. Richard Brody of The New Yorker is a really interesting critic. I don't always agree with him. His views are very idiosyncratic, but he will point you in the direction of movies that you might not have paid attention to.
I'm curious about that interaction between film critique and film. Obviously, film affects film critique. film critics are writing about movies, but has there ever really been some significant trends the other way? Have the work of film critics ever affected the way that people make movies?
Well, yes, in particularly some very explicitly direct ways. The people who made the films that we make up the French New Wave, almost to the last one of them, began their careers as film critics for a journal in Paris called the Cahiers du Cinéma, which was edited by André Bazin, who is sometimes called the father of serious film criticism. And he nurtured these people who then went on to find ways to raise small amounts of money and make films that changed the way we think about cinema, like Godard's Breathless and Truffaut's The 400 Blows. In the United States, Paul Schrader wrote an essay published in 1970 in a small magazine called Notes on Film Noir. Schrader, of course, goes on to write the screenplay for Taxi Driver and then to become a very estimable director himself. But it's interesting that Notes on Film Noir occurs 2 years before Chinatown appears and the beginning of the neo-noir revival. So almost certainly Schrader's essay influenced that trend in filmmaking.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that one of your particular interests is American cinema. What are some of the ways in that American cinema differs from other countries today? What are some things that we might not see out of Hollywood movies that other countries are doing?
Well, American cinema differs today from every other cinema. There is no other cinema in the world that is so focused on superhero movies, on franchises, on sequels. There's no other industry in the world that can support the budgets that Hollywood lavishes on those big production films. So we are an outlier. We're also still the dominant film industry in the world, though China is hot on our heels. But China does not produce anywhere near as many movies as we do, even to this day. They could if they wanted to. They have the largest film audience in the world, but they choose not to. Every other film, national film industry, remains, by American standards, sort of producing movies that look more like films did 30 or 40 years ago, which to me is all to the good. I much prefer those movies.
So on the topic of foreign films, they're getting popular. So Parasite recently won the first Oscar for Best Picture for a foreign movie. And you see a lot of people, especially younger people, consuming more anime and K-dramas from East Asia. There seems to be a trend in the United States to be able to consume more foreign media. What do you think has driven this trend, and do you see it having an impact on our domestic film industry?
Well, I think what's driven the trend is that people are hungry for different kinds of stories that these foreign films reflect. And I think films from Asia in particular are different enough from both European and American cinema that they really feel fresh to folks. We should keep in mind, though, that the audiences for these films, while significant in the sense that they bring in enough money, given the scale that these films are produced at, to be significant, they're still, it's a tiny fraction of the larger film audience here. I mean, most Americans are not seeing those films. It's a niche audience.
Mm-hmm. Pivoting towards something that we talked about in the class that I took from you, Intro to Film Studies, we discussed the auteur filmmaker quite a bit. How does one person guiding the vision of an entire film change the way that it's made versus having multiple people act as director, cinematographer, screenwriter?
Well, I'm not sure it changes, likely changes the way it is made. All films, I'm sure there are, there's the odd exception that proves the rule, but basically all films are highly collaborative projects. There are hundreds of people working even on a very small budget movie these days. So the guiding, the person who's the guiding intelligence is going to be having to use that collaborative system. The difference between films that have a clear auteur and those that don't mainly have to do with the relationship of a particular film to others that an individual has made. Howard Hawks, one of the great directors from the classic era of Hollywood cinema, who managed, unlike most of his contemporaries, to never have a long-term studio contract. So he could float among studios and have more control over his own work, asserted that a great film was a film that had a few good scenes and you could tell who the devil made it. And so what he meant by that was, if you could recognize a personal signature in the movie, that really mattered to him. It was part of what made the film valuable. And that's the basic idea behind the auteur theory, that you should be able to tell that this particular intelligence is behind the movie.
When you think of great filmmakers, great auteur filmmakers, a lot of times the names that come to mind are older people, whether in the golden age of Hollywood or filmmakers who are kind of nearing the end of their career. Who are some of the younger filmmakers to look out for right now?
Wes Anderson, I would say, is the most interesting auteur working in Hollywood today, which isn't to say I like all of his movies, but I think every one of his movies is interesting, and I can always tell who the devil made it.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Wes Anderson movies myself. Grand Budapest Hotel is one of my favorites.
Also one of mine.
Sort of shifting over to your job, how you teach students about film. I took your course a lot and remember enjoying it quite a bit, but it forced me to change the way that I watch movies. Watching a movie in a more analytical sense and being able to critique particular aspects definitely requires a sort of mindset change when you're watching a movie. What are some ways that you encourage students to approach that viewing experience with an eye for analysis and critique?
Well, by asking them to think about the way the film is made and structured, how it's edited. Are there long takes or lots of short ones? Is the dialogue intended to be realistic or is it meant to be entertaining? Those two things are often opposed to each other. Are the settings evocative of an actual place, or are they more designed to evoke a kind of ideal world? There are so many levels in which you can analyze a film, which is why I think they are so fascinating to study. But by the way, I don't think people necessarily ought to go to the movies when they watch a film the first time and be primarily there to analyze it. I think it is important to let the film wash over you and to experience it as a piece of entertainment and as an emotional experience. Films are designed to evoke emotions in us. And so that's why watching movies more than once is really essential to be able to understand how they work. Because the second time you can begin to pay less attention to your emotions and think about the film more.
So a lot of times when we're talking about historical movies, we talk about the social or political context around them. However, when we talk about maybe more modern movies, it's sometimes a little harder to isolate that out because we're living in that social and political context. What are some of the social trends or political trends that you see affecting movies the most now, such that film critics in 50 years will look back and say, oh, they did this because of this trend?
Well, so clearly, the changing gender roles and attitudes towards sexuality are a major change. In classic Hollywood, basically, you have the heterosexual couple and the presumption that that couple will get married if the movie is to have a happy ending. And then there's a whole series of changes. I mean, in the late 60s and early 70s, you begin to get movies where people have relationships and they don't get married and it's not a tragedy. And part of this has to do with women beginning to be understood as not just being defined by their roles as wife and mother, but starting to have jobs outside the home that are more than just menial. And the Civil Rights Act of the 1960s and legal challenges to it in the early 70s are part of that context. But then, of course, attitudes towards homosexuality begin to change. Actually, they begin to change right around that same moment, but it's only been much more recently. It's been about 10 years, for example, since the Supreme Court ruled that same-sex marriage had to be legal across the country. That was a really significant event, and of course it has resulted in there being, say, romantic comedies about same-sex couples, which, I mean, there were a few before that, but not all that many. And of course we don't know, given the changes in the Supreme Court, whether same-sex marriage will continue to be legal. Many people fear that the current conservative court might overturn that ruling. But films, I think, will continue to reflect those changing attitudes. And presumably we're going to see more gender diversity, more diversity of sexuality in movies as time goes on. One wonders how much the current political divisions in the country, which are about as bleak or as stark, stark is the better word, as they've ever been since the Civil War, whether that will be understood as a context for contemporary cinema. You see some of it reflected in a movie like Oppenheimer, which is partly about the kind of historical precursor moment, the McCarthy era, which affects the way in which Oppenheimer was treated, even though he was a national hero.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss.